Cruising down the street, I wonder where this road would lead. So many possibilities. Care to share what you think? Oh, noodles, what do you see? Back Road Odyssey.
The Donner Party, One Wrong Turn, Part 1. Out where the hand clasps a little stronger. Out where the smile dwells a little longer. That's where the West begins. Out where the sun is a little brighter. Where the snows that fall are a trifle wider. Where the bonds of home are a wee bit tighter. That's where the West begins. Arthur Chapman.
The weird dichotomy of looking out at the lake, knowing what ended up happening. The water's very still, the mountains are beautiful, the sky is clear, but it's almost like nothing had happened here.
This is my dog Noodles and I walking along the shore of Donner Lake, the location of perhaps one of the darkest settler stories in American history. At this point, I had a vague recollection of the Donner story. Upon further research, I might have skipped the lake altogether. Every settler has the same goal in 1846, to make it safely west. By then, this really isn't a wild hope because the Oregon Trail and the Californian Trail are both well-traveled and relatively reliable. There are few reasons to doubt your family's safe passage. That is, if you stay on the path. It's March 1846. In Springfield, Illinois, two families prepare to head west. The Donners and the Reeds. Here are four key characters you have to know. Starting with George Donner, a well-to-do, decent farmer, affectionately called Uncle George by neighbors and friends. He seems to have had an adventurous streak because at 62, George initiates the move to California with his wife and five children. Despite his popularity, though, for much of the trek, George plays a passive role in decisions made by the party. Next, we have Tamsin Donner, George's wife. Or should I say, George is Tamsin's husband, because she should have been the leader of this group. She plays a key role in the story to come. She is bright-eyed, supportive, curious, and dreams of starting a girls' school in California. Next, James Reed, a respected, if temperamental, and deeply, deeply impulsive businessman. This impulsivity, as we'll see, sets the group down a deeply sinister path. Finally, Margaret Reed, the wife of James, who is perhaps the most optimistic about the move. She is in constant poor health and has hopes that the California climate will improve her condition. To make the passage more comfortable for Margaret, James outfits their main wagon with an iron stove, cushioned seats, and bunks for sleeping. Dubbed by fellow travelers the Palace Car, this behemoth vessel would prove to be a major hindrance as the journey continues. To no one's surprise, really, this arrogance does the party no favors going forward. So, George Donner, Tamsin Donner, James Reed, Margaret Reed. That's who you need to know. By now, everyone's ready to go. It's now mid-April, weeks later than the recommended time for departure. Unbothered, though, the party of roughly 31 leave Springfield, never to return. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere, ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. The Road Not Taken, Robert Frost. Not always great advice, incidentally, Mr. Frost. You see, if the party had continued on the well-worn path, perhaps the Donner and Reed families would have faded into relative obscurity. The party meets up with a multitude of others, traveling through Independence, Missouri, and on to the main trail. And for the next 650 miles, times are good. It would have continued this way. If not for the terrible recommendation of Lansford Hastings, a guide and explorer, albeit an extremely poor one. Because in making this recommendation, in researching this route, Lansford essentially looks at a map, draws a line between two already established paths, the Oregon and California, and calls it a day, without regard for terrain or simple logistics, or perhaps more crucially, without traversing the path himself. Enter James Reed. He's a businessman, an opportunist. Why travel more than you have to? Reed manages to convince the party to take this aptly named Hastings Cutoff, despite being warned several times by other more traveled personnel of the many perils along this new road. Interestingly, only one person strongly objects to this route, Tamsin Donner. And where they should have heeded her sound advice, the party instead leaves the main trail, heading southwest from what is now Wyoming. The die is cast. With George Donner, Uncle George, as the newly hesitant elected leader, the group of some now 87 people forge on. 29 men, 15 women, and 43 children set off into unknown terrain. Desert is so huge and the horizon so distant that they should make a person feel small, as if he should remain silent. Paulo Coelho. To start, they expect the path to save them 300 miles of hard travel. Not so. The aptly named Hastings Cutoff is actually 125 miles longer than the established paths they had just left. It also cuts straight through some of the harshest terrain in the country. Oblivious to this crucial fact, the Donner Party creates a fresh path through the jagged Wasatch Mountains. But forging new paths takes resources, patience, and time, all of which are limited. But still, somehow, they manage to cross. At the eastern base of the mountains, they pause. Reluctantly, they step across the barren Great Salt Flats of Utah. The sun cooks the travelers as they walk. The available water only makes those who drink it sick. So tensions run high. On October 5th, James Reed, arguably the sole reason for the group's current plight, fatally stabs someone in the heat of an argument. After the incident with James, some within the group want to hang Reed for the foul play, but a majority opts for simple banishment. Essentially, the group assumes a death sentence in itself. Given a lone horse, James Reed disappears into the horizon, leaving Margaret and his children behind. When next the party sees Reed, circumstances will be much, much different. The desert, Hastings had said, should take 2 days and two nights. It costs the party 5 long, brutal days, dozens of cattle, and supplies their oxen could no longer carry. But perhaps the most valuable resource, that of time, came to front of mind, because the winds of winter could be felt as they crossed the Ruby Mountains towards a lake at the base of the Sierra Nevada foothills. Nothing burns like the cold, but only for a while. Then it gets inside you and starts to fill you up. And after a while, you don't have the strength to fight it. George R.R. Martin.
It's really hard to put myself in their position, because I'm here roughly around the same time that they would have been, but it's nice out. It's beautiful. It's peaceful. There's a lot of trees around. You might be able to hear a highway. That's where I came down from.
The winter at what is now called Donner Lake is bad at the best of times, but the specific winter of 1846 was nothing short of terrible. Exhausted by this point, malnourished, and increasingly freezing, the Donner Party stand at the foothills of the Sierra Nevada. Looking up where they had expected to see a path forward, they see feet of unseasonably deep snow, making the mountains impassable. They had missed their window to go through the Sierra Nevada by a mere 2 days. At this moment, California has never felt further away. James Reed miraculously makes it to California after banishment. Will Margaret and their children shudder in the cold, a mountain between them both? Tamsin and George Donner can only comfort their children as they watch snow pile deeper like a time glass. A chilling conclusion is collectively reached as they stare at the ice-still lake. It will only get worse. And, Jesus, does it get worse. Hypothermia, murder, and cannibalism are all characteristics of the well-known Donner story. And we'll get into all of that in part two. But for now, I hope to have provided some context and building blocks for the escalation of this story. Standing at the lake, I kept thinking to myself, this location would be such a beautiful, untainted place if not for an arrogant businessman, a foolish explorer, and one wrong turn. Thank you, genuinely, for listening to Backroad Odyssey. I appreciate your time. If you value the stories we're trying to tell here, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening now. Genuinely, genuinely helps the show grow. What I find fascinating about traveling to all these different locations is that anywhere you go has a different story. Sometimes they're incredibly tragic and sad, like the one today, and sometimes they're not. And that's the beauty of going to different places and what we're trying to do with this show. That is it for today. Be good to each other, take care of yourselves, and where to next?
Backroad Odyssey.